now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Brendan D. Murphy. Brendan D. Murphy is the author of The Grand Illusion, A Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. He's also the founder of the Global Freedom Movement and the Global Freedom Truthiversity. Brendan is a visionary anchor for the new consciousness. He has a compassionate heart, keen intellect, no bullshit humanitarianism, and a genuine loathing for political correctness. Hear, hear. He advocates a broad spectrum awareness, meaning a big picture, well-rounded, multifaceted worldview, the result of years of study connecting the dots between the various rabbit holes. His life's work is the awakening, healing, and educating of humanity, and his website is globalfreedommovement.org. So without any further ado, Brendan Murphy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, mate.
It's quite an honor to have you, Brendan. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time. Now, we've got so many issues, so many things going on in the world. Whatever is on your mind, whatever you feel that you need to bring up at the moment, please, let's hear it.
Oh, well, wow, where do we start? I'll tell you what we've been dealing with lately is this insane this uprising and inundation of the neo-feminist phenomenon. And I know you know what's going on there. I mean, it's not pretty. And we've just been noticing, we've been watching as, you know, they've been importing this mind virus into Australia now, and they're about to sort of really unleash it. We're just hearing, you know, stuff about, oh, they're going to be talking about, you know, what is it, rape culture in university campuses and all this sort of stuff. And just bringing that victim consciousness over here. And it's really, I'm feeling the need to sort of pick up the sword, so to speak, and really just have at it, because it's so, this third wave feminist stuff and the social justice warrior stuff, I mean, it's overall, on average, it's quite toxic. So I think we need to nip it in the bud before it sets in here like it's done so in America.
Yes, we've seen the malign influence of the George Soros-funded social justice warriors. It used to be the way in the college universities in America that's where, like, the anti-war movements were. That's where young people would speak out about the oppression and the injustice of the system. And now the universities are a breeding ground for these social justice warriors. And, you know, the message seems to be, it's like, we're victims and we're going to take away everyone's rights in order for us to maintain our victimhood. It's insane.
Yeah, it's just so toxic. And you know, I'm looking at this thing from the level of, you know, the collective unconscious, and it's obviously, you know, the archetypes that are being sort of channeled and manifested here. You know, it's the wounded child and the abandoned child and, you know, the victim archetype, and it's just, that's what fundamentally fuels this whole thing, and that's why it's so divisive and so toxic, because there's only these people in identifying as victims, that by default puts everybody else in the category of oppressors. And, you know, in the feminist movement, or neo-feminist movement, you know, that means the men are the oppressors, because the women in their paradigm are the oppressed. So it just pits man against woman, and it's so unnecessary and so toxic. And I think it's pulling in the kids, really, you know, the college and university students, because they're young and they're naive. They don't understand where these doctrines and belief structures were actually formulated and who brought them in and why they've been pushing them and spreading them. And they don't know that stuff. They're just, you know, sort of young and wide-eyed, and they're angry about something, and they're resentful about something. And they don't seem to really know what, so they adopt this ideology that gives them a recipe for thinking, which tells them, well, here are your oppressors. It's men, or it's this and that, and you're the victim here. So here's how you have to think, and that's what they do. They follow that formula quite, you know, robotically, and unfortunately, you can't have a different opinion to them, because you're the oppressor and you don't get a say. So as you know, their victims, what that means is they need sympathy and they need to be heard and they need to be understood, and no one else gets a say unless they're also victims. So it's pretty toxic, man, and it's starting to become mainstream here in Australia big time. I don't know, did you watch the ABC The Hack Show last night?
No, what happened?
The question was, is male privilege bullshit? And you know, because you know it's the ABC, you know they're pretty left leaning. They're not. I don't think anyone who knows what's going on was expecting them to do an honest job of it. But I mean, it's just that there's so much more sympathetic to the neo-feminist narrative that you know men are in the wrong. Men are the violent ones. It's always the man who's the perpetrator and all this sort of stuff. And the way they present people. I mean, like you look at Karen Straughan, right? She's a men's rights activist, and she's very, very knowledgeable, very well spoken. I mean, she tears strips off these neo-feminists. She would eat them for breakfast, and they were going to have her on live. And at the last minute, apparently, someone decided that they weren't going to have her live, and they just played a clip, just a little snippet from her outside of the studio at another time and place. And, you know, they gave her maybe 1 or 2 minutes worth of airtime in that clip, and they kept her off air live. And I think they obviously didn't want their feminist narrative to be challenged by someone as knowledgeable and nuanced and intelligent as Karen Straughan. And the way you got to look at the way they present someone as well. I mean, they presented her as a gender traitor. That was how they were. They basically introduced this woman because she doesn't simply accept the neo-feminist ideology lock stock and two smoking barrels. That makes her a gender traitor, as if she's a woman hater.
She's a self-loathing woman.
I know. It's the exact same strategy they use when a Jewish person comes out and exposes what the state of Israel does, and they go, "Oh, you're a self-loathing Jew." And it's like, no, they're actually just pointing out the facts of the matter. It's got nothing to do with gender or self-loathing or any of this garbage. And so they introduce Karen Straughan as, "Is this woman a gender traitor?" And of course, you know, so that immediately taints people's perception of this woman,
Yes.
which is obviously the point. And then they had this woman who's, I just cannot. I mean, just wow. Clementine Ford, I think, is her name, and she's one of these neo-feminist types who pretends to be moderate and neutral, and she put on a very disingenuous facade. But the way they introduce her, in contrast to Karen Straughan, was that she's just this, you know, neo-feminist kind of human rights advocate type person who's just doing the best they can in a difficult situation and just cares about everybody and wants everyone to you know be equally heard and blah 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 and it was just so disingenuous, and they can't the ABC just cannot get anything right when it matters. I mean, the whole thing is they deliberately, I believe, on some level they deliberately keep the discourse on the most superficial level humanly possible, so that no one ever actually gets into the historical roots and the
Yes.
development over time. You know, what happened here? I mean, who's Marcuse? Who's Adorno? Who's Horkheimer? What did these guys do? Who brought neo-feminism and feminism to us in the first place? And who keeps funding? I mean, George Soros, you mentioned. I mean, who keeps pouring these the massive funds into these movements and ideologies to keep them going, knowing, I mean, when you could look around, you see all it does is it's divisive. It's just a divide and conquer strategy, and it's so frigging obvious. And I can't believe that people can't see that. It drives me crazy.
I know, it's crazy. You know, like I mentioned earlier, that in the old days in America, there would be like student, anti-war protests. But on the other hand, the universities of America, because of the malign influence of the tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera, they always, these universities and then the finishing schools were always hotbeds of radicalism of one form or another. It was like, people would go to these schools and then the parents would be surprised when their kids came back from the Poison Ivy universities of Berkeley or from Berkeley somewhere, and they're just spouting off all this cultural Marxism drivel, and they're wondering like, what happened to my kid? I sent them off, and I had all this hope for them. Then they come back, and it's just like a rage against the world kind of thing, and it's the victim aggressor mentality. Is how I call it. It's like we're victims, and we're going to lash out in a dozen different directions, and we're justified in doing so. And it reminds me also of what there was this Soviet spy in the 1930s in America. Her name was Hita Massing, in a predecessor organization of the KGB. She said something I thought was so profound. She said, "When you try to recruit somebody," in so many words, I'm paraphrasing her, "you have to keep the ideology and the recruitment pitch to the simplest level possible. You have to explain everything in the simplest terms because then you can engage their emotions, right? And once their emotions are engaged and they feel empowered, right? Oh, look out."
Oh yeah, I mean, and that's why it's so effective with university and college students, because the education system is through high school. All of schooling is deliberately dumbed down so that they're not equipped intellectually and emotionally to be able to function properly in the world as, well-balanced adults. They get to college and then they get this cultural Marxist crap, gender studies and all this garbage. And they're brainwashed because they don't have the immune system, like the psychological immune system, to shield themselves and protect themselves from it. And they adopt this poisonous ideology. It's like George Bush with, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. That's the kind of mentality they've got. And it's just so damaging. It's so damaging to take on the filter that tells you that the other gender is your mortal enemy, and there's nothing they can do or say that's worth listening to. Everything they say is just, apologetics, and it's garbage. And they're evil, you're righteous, and you're in the right, they're in the wrong, and basically we'd be better off destroying them. Yeah, that's kind of what it boils down to virtually.
Yes, and it's turned into a war of like archetypal symbols where you have women. First of all, they're always bitching and moaning about being sexualized and being marginalized and being objectified, and then they go on these marches where they're dressed as big vaginas. I watch this and I say, it's official. We're in cloud cuckoo land.
I saw that and I said to Amy, they should have worn dicks on their heads because they look like a
They
bunch of
look
dicks.
like a bunch of dickheads. That
That was.
that's right. And another thing also is how they've created all these artificial fault lines, these cultural Marxists. I have to give credit where credit's due. And of course, they've had so much experience doing it, just creating disruption and agitation propaganda everywhere they go. I mean, they're past masters at it. But it's to the point now where, Brendan, where it's a we're somehow offending a young girl by or a young boy by calling him a young boy. Or a young girl by calling her she's a young girl. And it's like we have to allow the child, actually allow the system and the state to decide the gender for the child. Because for us to say that, we're somehow taking away the right of the child to make a choice. I mean, it's completely insane.
Yeah, it is. It's like it's just such a major thought control agenda. You can't, because they're trying to control language. And if you control language, then
Yes.
you control the way people think and the way people express or fail to express themselves properly. So obviously, by bastardizing language and coming up with a whole lexicon of ridiculous neologisms like, zir or zir or viz or ver and all this crap, that these pronouns you're supposed to use to address these people now. I mean, it's out of control, and it's a thought control thing. And the bottom line is, it's designed to destroy, to rot our culture from within. And what that function serves, the purpose that serves is, it distracts us from the real people with real power who are screwing
Yes,
everybody.
that's right. And you look at the courses now in the universities, gender studies, white privilege courses, right? I mean, the children, the students are taught that, okay, you're white, therefore you're automatically afflicted with white privilege. Therefore, you are automatically, it's like this kind of shared assumed guilt, which the cultural Marxists and the social engineers are very good at too, assigning collective guilt upon a nation, upon a demographic, upon a group of people. In this case, it just happens to be males, right? So it's like, the net is getting progressively wider and wider and wider.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I guess the next logical step is to figure out a way that we can get men and women to be so ashamed of themselves that nobody ever says anything ever again. Like we've already outlawed one gender from being able to speak freely, so the next step is outlawing both, I suppose.
And that's a funny thing about it too, because they don't even see these social justice warriors and this latest generation of feminists, the inherent contradiction. On the one hand, they're screaming their victimhood. On the other, they're doing their darndest to squelch the right of expression, the right of free speech, the right of a presumed like antagonist from their perspective to even give an accounting of themselves. It's like, whoa, 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 I got my hands up. Like, why all the hostility? I'm just here to find out, I'm here to attend this function. I'm here to go to this play, whatever. And, you're hurling all this abuse at me. And one finds out very quickly with these, whether they're social justice warriors or these new age feminists, that reason and logic and rationality goes right out the window. It's
Oh,
all
yeah.
about high drama, high emotions, these visceral kinds of like primordial emotions that they give vent to. That it's all about the emotional level and emotional content.
And the intensity of it is so disproportionate to what it is that they think they're responding to or reacting to. It's completely off the charts. I just think it's fueled by that those forces in the collective unconscious that have been, repressed or not healthily dealt with. I mean, this is a movement that is comprised of, and I don't say this to be cruel or callous, but the movement is comprised largely of the walking wounded.
Yes.
And the problem is that, you can't go out into the world. You can't give the world something that you don't have. You can't give the world peace if you are at war within yourself. You know what I mean? These are people who are very confused, very hurt, very wounded, very conflicted, and they're lashing out like a child would. And that's why things, like confrontations with these people escalate so rapidly, because a child has no sense of what's appropriate, what's ethical, what's right, what's wrong, or what's rational or logical. So they have none of that, and their doctrine tells them to abandon that. This whole critical theory thing and postmodernism. So you can't. It's like dealing with a 5-year-old who's having a dummy spit, and you can't reason your way through it. All you can do is kind of weather the storm and hope that it passes, and hope that if we do call out the bullshit, that at least a few of them who are kind of still not completely insane will kind of catch on and go, oh, hang on a minute, this you're right, this doesn't add up, doesn't make sense, this is doing more harm than good, and maybe I just need to step back here and reassess what I'm actually contributing to the world here, because from what I can see, they're not achieving any additional justice. They're not enhancing anything at all, other than to enhance this movement against freedom of speech. It's like you just said, they can't see the paradox or the hypocrisy of demanding their right to be heard while simultaneously, effectively putting their hands over their enemies' mouths and silencing them. So it's complete hypocrisy. But that doesn't matter, because as a victim, you can justify anything, because you're put upon, you're oppressed. It doesn't matter what the other person says or does. And I've seen this up close and personal. I've seen how a damaged, neurotic, insecure, wounded female can function, and it's exactly what I'm seeing on the macro scale with the neo-feminist movement. Not original feminists. I just want to be clear that, I know some people who identify as feminists, like the old school, and that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the neo-feminist stuff, which is just batshit crazy. And there's something wrong when there's hordes of women who are looking at it going, oh man, this is nuts. This is crazy. This is out of control. And they're, the honey badgers movement. I mean, look at these women who are actually women who are taking up the mantle of like men's rights activists, because men have been so shut down and repressed and suppressed and silenced that they can't speak their feelings or their minds anymore. I mean, we don't take men's suicide seriously. We don't take the female domestic violence against men seriously, you know, because men have been framed as the oppressor. So who gives a shit what happens to them, yeah?
Yes, and this also runs in parallel with, and incrementally over time, Brendan, the what I call the emasculation of the divine masculine. Because yeah, you see this with the Hollywood cultural Marxist agenda. Okay, like, I love all people of all genders, of all sexual persuasions, as long as they're coming from a good place and they don't harm animals or children or whatever, I'm fine with them, right? But what they've been doing in Hollywood especially is they've been consistently and persistently showing a man, a male who's been turned into a eunuch, Brendan. They routinely depict a male who doesn't even know what end of a hammer to hold. Like the Will Ferrell kind of archetype, this big hulking guy that's like a real wuss and just a social misfit. And then you look at American shows like Saturday Night Live. Now, like, when that show first came out, it was counterculture. It was pretty funny. It was kind of risky and edgy. And then over time, the social engineers got a hold of it, and it almost became a rite of passage, Brendan, where almost every major Hollywood leading man, if he wanted to get to that next stage, it was a rite of passage where he had to do a skit on Saturday Night Live where he would play a skit where he was a flaming, effeminate gay guy. Ben Affleck, the guy who David Duchovny in X-Files, it didn't matter who it was. It was their turn, baby. It was like, you got to go in there and you got to do one or two comedy skits when you play a lisping, effeminate gay guy, which I think at some level was probably even offensive to gay guys, you know, the way it was all done. But so running parallel, you know, to the whole feminist, neo-feminist movement was this blatant effort to marginalize, emasculate, and feminize males.
Yeah, yeah. You can see it now. It's still happening. And I think I remember seeing, I can't remember which celebrity, a couple of African-American celebrities were talking about the way that black men are deliberately put through this process where in order to get, you know, to get to the top, so to speak, you know, to make it in showbiz, they have to submit to this emasculating sort of process they get put through. So it's this weird thing where all the lines are being blurred, all our
yes,
a traditional sort of our categories are being turned upside down and inverted. And I think basically, like, it serves a few different purposes. I mean, it puts everyone at odds with everybody, and also fundamentally what they're doing with this destruction of the female and the masculine archetypes is that it destroys the family unit, and it means that the state then can be much more influential over, for example, the children in a family
yes,
that is so dysfunctional. So they can seize the children and hold them captive, you know, ideologically with this, you know, Marxist garbage. And I think that's a large part of what's going on, because, you look around and the adults aren't necessarily, in some respects, they're not the ones who are suffering. It's the kids who are left with, a dad who is a wuss and can't stand up for himself, or a woman who's hyper-masculine and out of control and violent, or whatever it is, you know, whatever their situation is, and the kids then become effectively wards of the state, and that's exactly what the social engineers want, because they want control, right? So if you can get the kids, if you can get capture a human mind when it's young instead of when it's old and formed and set and they've got a grasp on logic and whatever, it's much easier then, you know. It's like that phrase from the Catholic I'm having a mental blank, the Catholic military branch, you know, the guy who said,
the Jesuits, yeah,
thank you, the Jesuits, who said, give me the boy till he's seven and I'll give you the man, kind of thing.
Yes. And it's operant conditioning, where they're trained in classic B.F. Skinner style to, you know, they psych profile these people, Brendan, as you know, and then they look for those wounded people. And it's interesting how you pointed out, you have the strong, overly masculine female, and then you have the weak, emasculated male, because in Black Ops, they actually actively seek it to recruit males who were raised by a strong, domineering mother and either an absentee father or a weak father, and within that child, within that young adult, they also look, interestingly enough, for latent homosexual tendencies, because those people are ideal for like black ops purposes, for assassination purposes. You see all kinds of examples in history, like David Ferry. He wanted to be a Catholic priest, but he was a pedophile, and he couldn't make it at that, so he winds up being a CIA paramilitary officer. Go figure, right? So you have that dynamic going on, and what they've done also, very clever, is what they've done is by championing their victimhood. And by their handlers and by their social engineers playing on their fears, keeping them in permanent fright flight mode, they've managed to turn males into the demonic other, right? I mean, you think of like in World War II, how the Japanese and the Germans, they were turned by propagandists into the demonic other. They've been stripped of their humanity. They're just evil, fanged, snarling kind of foes that will tear your throat out. And so these people that have been thus empowered by the cultural Marxist professors, by the Soros funding, they're turned loose, and they know that they're pretty much a protected species. You see in these like these Berkeley riots and stuff, they don't go after the social justice warriors. They could be causing as much mayhem and havoc as they want. It's not them that the cops will go after. It's anyone that's like wearing a Donald Trump pin or something, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously you're racist if you have anything positive to say about Trump, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this whole thing, I just look at it and I think we're gonna have to wait for it to blow over to a large extent. But if we could find a way to get through to people that all of this could be diffused and it would evaporate if we could actually get people to take a step back, to disidentify with
Yes.
the belief structure that they have identified with. Because, I mean, that's a fundamental problem in itself. People identify with something, it becomes their identity, it's who they are. And then once that happens, it's very hard. You can't even prize the two apart, the identity, you can't prize apart the human being from the construct that they've taken on with a crowbar, because, the ego structure sees that as a big threat.
Yes.
It's almost like you're threatening to kill them by taking away their identity. That's how the ego reacts, right? So it's a messed up situation. But the thing is, we have the tools. We have so many different modalities for healing the human psyche, and we could evaporate this thing virtually overnight if we could get people to step back from it and go, you know what? Maybe I'll just look at myself in the mirror and do the healing work. I'm going to go into my psyche. I'm going to look at these wounds. I'm going to look at what I'm resentful of. I'm going to look at who hurt me, all the traumas, all this shit that happened to me in my life. And I'm going to actually do the healing work on myself so that I'm not so feral and angry and resentful and bitter and hostile. And if people actually did that en masse, you would not have a neo-feminist movement at all, I would say.
Yes, because by going within and doing the essential work and making our inner shadow our ally instead of our adversary, then we can begin the reintegration healing process, and then we won't be so reactive, right? And see, that's and you also look, because it's all, as you know, Brandon, it's all two sides of the same coin. It's like the so-called left against like the alt-right slash the Trump supporters. Everything has been like bifurcated into these like warring competing factions. Everything has been atomized. Everything has been factionalized. So, like a Trump supporter or someone with a Trump bumper sticker on their car, they get set upon by a bunch of, I mean, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing at the lunacy of it. They get set upon by a bunch of these leftist Soros funded social justice warriors, and everything is reduced to the most base common denominator, Brendan, of high emotion. And what's interesting is, it's interesting how the predictive programming works, because for many years also, this, I don't know where this phenomena started, whether it was the UK, where it was America, but the phenomenon of what I call the unreality shows, or really the reality shows, where you would have all these freaky people, and And things like rationality, reason, debate, like logic, it's all just chucked out the window.
Oh, yeah.
And all that's left on the platter is like irrationality, boorishness, resentfulness, animosity. And those things were glorified by the Hollywood, tribalist collectivist system, basically. And what it did was it gave people permission. Listen, look at the Kardashians. Look at Jordy Shore. It's like they're on TV. They're acting this way, right? And it's glorified, and it almost gives people the exact same wounded, unhealed people we were just talking about. It gives them permission to give vent to their base impulses.
I mean, it gives them something to aspire to because, like you said, it's glorified. So instead of, getting these people help, we put them on TV and we get millions of people to watch them and model them, and we just have this culture of celebrating mediocrity, which is so frustrating.
Yes, that's
Especially,
another aspect.
oh yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, it's just part of the dumbing down process and the social engineering stuff. If you keep people stupid and ignorant and dumb, then they're very easy to manipulate. You can sell them into fear, which is what's been done with the neo-feminist movement. Like you said, if you sell people into believing, if you can get them to believe that they're threatened somehow. In politics, you can tell them that terrorists are coming to get them or whatever. In the neo-feminist movement, they believe that men are out to get them. Every man's a potential rapist and all this stuff. So they're constantly in fight or flight. And in that brain state where you're just in the reptilian center and the mammalian center, you're very limited in your intelligence. You're very limited in your cognitive capacities. You can't think flexibly. You can't think calmly. You can't think rationally. And that's why we get all these hysterical emotional outbursts from, the SJWs and the neo-fems, because that's what they've been conditioned into doing. Like you said, they're conditioned into responding and functioning through emotion, through communicating through emotion. And it's all, unfortunately, it's all primarily it's sh the shadow content that gets spewed out into the world. That's what it's being fueled by, these undealt with shadows. And it's just, we can't, I just don't see a way, a good, easy, clear-cut solution. I think hopefully Australia will be a little bit more resistant to it than America. I've been watching America, it's just tearing itself apart from the inside. And I've watched, we actually had, we Amy has been keeping very close tabs on this by she sort of went into undercover into one of these so-called women's groups.
Oh,
And
God.
oh yeah, sorry, yeah, and she exactly. Oh God, and so she went and learned up close and personal how they function. So this group was supposed to be a safe space sort of thing for women to share their perspectives, connect with each other, talk, and have an opinion. And it didn't matter what your opinion was. That was basically the theory of it. But she quickly found out that it was actually simply a neo-feminist think tank, and basically, if you even asked a question of these other women in terms of, what do you mean by this? Can you clarify this? Why do you say that? What is it that makes you believe that kind of thing? If you even just asked the questions, I'm not even talking about arguing or rebutting. I'm just talking about asking questions. They lose their friggin' minds. It's unbelievable. So it's a safe space as long as you agree with the feminist ideology.
Yes, and that's classic old school agitprop, Soviet era agitation propaganda, where you just send in these people to create a ruckus, to bash people, to just raise a hue and a cry. And it's interesting how so much of it fits into the communist ideology of having people really raise a ruckus and fret over essentially insignificant or trivial things, simply by igniting their emotions. And that's another problem. You pointed out the problem of the ego. When the ego is challenged, it rises up to defend itself fanatically, because people, as individuals and as a society, we're fanatically resistant to change. So when we're presented with information that conflicts with whatever dogmas or programming, we've been subjected to. And we talked earlier about the lobotomizing influence of the schools and the universities. In order to protect their ego, they have to resist it. Because, for example, just to draw a parallel, there's so many ardent Trump supporters who just cannot let go of the Messiah, Savior, vision they have of Donald Trump. It's like this, despite all the information you provide to him, look at this guy, Jared Kushner, his father was Mossad, and and this, that, and the other. It doesn't sink in because they're emotionally invested, Brendan. And if they can, if not just them, but like, I don't know if some of these latest version feminists are, reachable, other than, I don't know, convulsive shock therapy. I'm not making a joke about it, but because what happens is, from a, as you know, from a metaphysical standpoint too, the more someone stays in a state of permanent rage, entities of all kinds will jump without parachutes to get into those people. And then pretty soon it's like they're not even running the ship anymore.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is it. No one, obviously, you're never going to hear this at the 6 o'clock news, I mean, they're not going to talk about what goes on esoterically and, in the subconscious. It's exactly like you said. This is scattered throughout, the literature. It's this whole thing about people not being in control of their faculties. Giving into anger, uncontrollable anger, that's an energetic beacon for these astral parasites. They love this harvesting of human emotion. They come running
Yes.
for it, like you said. And we're a human farm. And I'm not even saying that, I think a lot of what happens in terms of that harvesting is simply incidental in terms of there's entities out there that are trying to self-sustain. They've got to eat something.
Yes.
And so, you get all these brainwashed, triggered humans who lose their minds if as soon as someone looks at them the wrong way, and they're jumping in like you're saying. It's like, it's not the only way that it happens either. Like consuming alcohol and drugs, going too far with that stuff will also have a similar effect. So it's another way that I'm sure some people think it's calculated and deliberate, and maybe it is, but I don't know, that they're opening us up to this sort of astral, an invasion, so that we are, like you said, we're not running the show. We really, and once you're infested like that with multiple entities, you become a danger to yourself and the people around you as well, and you become increasingly unstable, decreasingly in control of your rational mind. I mean, all that stuff just goes out the window when you get some of these nasty entities in there, some of the demonic type stuff and whatever else is jumping in. And this is again why we need people to start becoming aware of the alternative healing modalities that are available to us right now,
Yes.
which can put us back together and get these things out of us, and make us so that we're not so susceptible to these ridiculous, contrived, constructed ideologies like this cultural Marxist stuff that we're dealing with now. I mean, if we had a spiritually savvy population, none of this stuff would ever be an issue because they'd recognize the imbalances of it and the disingenuousness of it, and the people would sense viscerally that there's an agenda there that doesn't serve them, and we would just run in the other direction. So we've really got our work cut out for us in terms of overcoming this dark age that we're living in. It's going to be really, really interesting. I'm really hoping this neo-feminist thing burns out very quickly in Australia so that we can move on and we don't become divided like other countries have been, man.
Yeah, there's already been inroads in Australia with the whole political correctness, the PC thing, the multiculturalism, which is just another form of proxy warfare, where you have these weird dichotomies at work, Brendan, where, oh, we have to give away all of our rights because of these like phantom box cutter wielding terrorists who hijacked all these planes, yet we're going to let them all into the country. And then if they want to have all these mosques, well, where are they going to be spouting Sharia law, and where they're going to be like attacking people, who pass by and come and go? Because by and large, a lot of the people they let in from these hardcore Wahhabist Salafist countries, they're basically males. They let hordes of them in, and the only women they allow to come along with them are indoctrinated in those ideologies. I mean, they're veiled from head to foot, and so basically, it's just like taking over a culture from within by bringing in these alien cultures that refuse to assimilate. But so on the one hand, we're supposed to give up our rights because of the woo-woo terrorists. Oh, now they just changed the name to ISIS. But on the other hand, if you complain about, well, look at these guys are going around, these Wahhabist Salafist Muslims are, or Africans are running around assaulting people, or they're raping, gang raping women. No, that's bad. That's taboo. That we can't talk about that because it's racism. It's like they're just mucking with people's minds. And so what people need to do is, more than ever, is get away from the groupthink, because what happens is when the mob mentality, when the herd mentality kicks in, as is the case with the social justice warriors, these neo-feminists, the Wahhabists, Salafists, they're all cut from the same cloth. They're just varying degrees of intolerance and violence, as far as I'm concerned. That the common denominator is there's so much in their own headspace. They've been so shunted into this left brain of ideologies and dogmas, where they're so cut off from their own heart center and they're so cut off from source, that everything is like a visceral kind of like primordial reaction to them. They're very reactive, they're very emotive. Everything it likely triggers them in the various responses, because the world to them is either like very dangerous, or conversely, in where these like raping immigrants are concerned, it's like, well, we're in our happy honey ground now. They've turned us loose, and we're going to bring Sharia into play here, and to hell with anyone who doesn't want to go along with it. And then everyone else is just supposed to roll over. Right. Now, the one thing I know about the Aussies is, even though the Aussies have been disarmed because of this, false flag thing in, Port Arthur and, in places like that, what I know about the Aussies is the Aussies, there's a resilience to them. There's a mental toughness to them. They don't even have to, some of them don't even need to know all the details. All they need to know is someone is stepping on their toes and someone is giving them a ration. And it's like at some point there's going to be some pushback. And we started to see that already. Like in Melbourne, there was these Sudanese that were running amok, and a couple of Aussie blokes, stood up and like gave them what for, And it happened to be videotaped. I loved it, right? And so if the parents out there can really, really work with their children and say, look, some of the things they're teaching you, just go, just pretend like you believe it. Just score your tests the way they want you to score it, right? Just to go along, to get along. If they have to put them in the schools, but for crying out loud, I mean, folks, it's like, tell your children to just stay heart-centered and not be part of a mob pack mentality, because when they get into that pack mentality, that herd mentality, that's when they got them. That's when all the operant conditioning, the BF Skinner kind of manipulation, it all kicks in, and pretty soon they just become like all the rest, because they've identified with a group, and now they seem to have the power, and you know what I mean? So people really have to work individually with their kids.
Yeah, they really do. And, I mean, let's be honest, the fewer of our kids that we send into mainstream education, the better at this point.
Yes, absolutely.
We really need to look at, creating community schools, homeschooling. Obviously, you know that me and Amy are working on the Global Freedom University stuff. So we're trying to provide the very thing that we are saying that we need. We just think that the time is now that we have to start taking these measures and providing people with an exit strategy and a way forward out of the insane bullshit of the mainstream narrative and all the ridiculous programming and conditioning and whatnot that goes on. So, we have such a we have such an inauthentic, you know, ego-based culture right now. We've lost the divine masculine. We've lost the divine feminine. It's all been turned inside out, and we are completely we live on the surface of ourselves with no self, no deep self-awareness, no real self-knowledge, because you know the paradigm of positivism and materialism and reductionism has taken all of the deeper elements of who and what we are away from us. So now we're just these sort of ego shells living on the surface of ourselves, and all we can manage is sort of just buy more stuff, just consume, and you know, be entertained by all the celebrities and the sports, and nothing wrong with sport, but you know, we miss out on all the important stuff and the depth of who and what we are. And you know, that self-knowledge is really the key to setting ourselves free, because if you have an awareness or a sense of identity that goes beyond ego and into source, then you're not going to be susceptible to all the different ideologies that are floating around out there trying to occupy and invade your mind. It's not going to happen, because you understand the difference between, you know, what you fundamentally are, which can't be labeled or described or encapsulated in any way. It can't be captured. And you understand that a belief structure is just a belief structure. It's not who you are. So you don't fall into the trap of identifying with this stuff. And obviously that's, I think, got something to do with why we've got this, ever since, you know, what the Enlightenment and the Renaissance, we've had this culture of materialism, this philosophical materialism that tells us there's nothing beyond what we can sense with our physical senses and whatever our, you know, our equipment can detect, and that's all that exists. So immediately you do that and you eliminate, basically you eliminate 99.9 repeater of what a human being is when you adopt that paradigm, because what we are as physical human beings at the ego level is not even the tip of the iceberg. It's barely a snowflake on the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, because you know our the totality of ourselves is so vast. It's like an ocean of consciousness, an immeasurable ocean of consciousness, and everything due to the reductionism that we've been brainwashed into believing. And now they've taken that to the next step, Brendan, where like death, literal death and decomposition is glorified. You have these weird art exhibits going around all over the place where they have a bunch of cadavers, you know, in various stages of decomposition, or you have the weird spirit kind of art of that one whack job woman, right? Where they're you know, everything is just like not just reduced to the most base common denominator, but everything is reduced to like a really degraded, decomposed level, and we're so far above that because we are spirit beings in physical embodiment, and we're so much more than that. But the system just wants to just beat us down until we just give in. And another thing that's disturbing too, and it's all part and parcel of what we've been talking about, is the encroaching Borg mentality. And one would think that things like smartphones and tablets and iPads would kind of, you know, take us in the other direction, because we have all this access to information. But for many people, it's plugging them even more into this Borg collective. And I know in my past, Brendan, the times I've had the most trouble was when I'm not absolving myself of personal responsibility, but there were times when, due to my low self-worth, I hung out with bad association, because my self-worth was at a nadir, and I figured, well, maybe at some subconscious level, these guys, their self-worth is so low too that maybe they accept me, you know, and we can just hang out, and you know, we can be alike, I guess. And so that's another thing that happens also, is, you know, it's like we seek where our level of self-worth is at. And what that operant conditioning school system does is it takes all these wounded people and it just molds them. And so, yes, absolutely. Parents, if you can, take your kids out of the schools. You know, if your people out there are thinking of joining the military, for heaven's sake, don't do it. And then if you want to do something like like get in, and I know you know a lot about this subject, Brendan. If you want to get into the medical field, for crying out loud, know what it is, what you're getting into.
Exactly. Oh man, if we actually told prospective medical students what medicine is and what it's become and what they're going to be required to do, oh mate, the only people who would be there for the final exams would be certified bona fide sadomasochists.
Yes, and I had Janice Barcelo on the show, and she talked about, and I've met some of these people. I don't know what they call them here in Australia, but in America they call them residents. These are people like one rung removed from actually being a doctor. You know, they're studying to be a doctor. And I worked at a medical school basically, and man, they were grooming. They were activating the egos of these residents. They were not even fully fledged doctors yet. But you know, you talk about a god complex, and what happens is they just lose their empathy. It's drummed right out of them. The system promotes the narcissist and the sociopaths in the bunch because it appeals to their vanity, their ego, their status. And then, similar to, you know, in a way, the neo-feminists are inculcated and dogmatized, if that's a word, where the people in the medical schools are they're just conditioned to the belief that these people don't know what's good for them. They don't know anything about health. They don't know anything about their own bodies. They're basically stupid. So, you know, this notion is drilled into their brains where they basically have to make the decisions for these people because they're not qualified to make their own decisions.
Exactly. They've got like this sort of weird demigod complex going on where they don't believe that they can trust people to do the intelligent thing or make the right decision. Exactly.
Yes.
You've absolutely nailed it completely there. So there's this weird I just because I've not never been in medical school, I don't know exactly what they're doing or saying to these kids, but there's a process that they get put through which fosters such amazing arrogance.
Yes.
And unfortunately, also, because medicine now has become a religion unto itself,
Yes, it has.
what that means is that we've got doctors who are operating in territory in which they don't belong. So they're sort of, whether they know it or not, they've been put in the situation where they're trying to serve multiple roles. They're not just trying to be a doctor or a physician. They're trying to also be a priest and a healer and all sorts of other things as well. And they don't belong in those other territories. They're a fish out of water, and they're not equipped for it. They're not even real healers because what they are is technicians who are disease management specialists. They're not healers, so you can't, again, you know, like I said before, you can't give someone something that you don't have, and they don't have the, first of all, most doctors aren't particularly healthy, so how are they going to get you healthy? And they don't have the knowledge to do it anyway, so that's not how they're trained. They're trained to be glorified drug pushers, basically, because that's
Absolutely.
the pharmaceutical system is in control of the medical education system, and obviously the pharmaceutical system, its sole reason for being is to fatten its bottom line in perpetuity. So what are they going to do? They're going to insert into the curriculum material that leads students in down this road where they become nothing more than a glorified drug pusher or a radiation pusher or a surgery pusher, and they know nothing about healing, they know nothing about nutrition, they know very little about the mind-body connection. And they have no idea where medicine is actually at on the leading edge. So they're really, overall, medicine does more harm than good. And if you told students this stuff, and if you gave them the facts, then we could actually reduce the number of doctors. Actually, that would be a very, very good thing, reducing the number of doctors, because we are massively over-medicalized, and they're doing more harm than good now. So we need to shrink this professional body down. Shrink. We need to remove the radical monopoly that mainstream medicine has now over health and healing and well-being, and just there's a, it's become an ideological construct in itself now, and you're not allowed to disagree with what the doctors say because they're like the messengers of God. They're the intermediaries between God and man. You know, they're like the high priest. So whatever they declare from on high, that's the word of God. So you can't argue with that, and you just do what the doctor says and shut up and get on with it, basically.
And once again, they've been empowered. Whereas the social justice warriors and the neo-feminists, it's just questionable whether they even realize that they're being funded, whether they even realize someone's paying the freight for them, right? Whereas the medical institutions and the doctors and the nurses, and how it coalesces in a sinister way with the social services, where they can, be quite dismissive of a parent's concerns in our example about the treatment that their child is getting, and just arrogate for themselves the right to say no. It's like this cannabis oil, that's like a quack treatment. We will get your child back into chemotherapy, and it's just so sinister that they feel that this they have this godlike power within them. But once again, it goes back to all these patently unhealed, traumatized people, wounded masculine, wounded feminine, and being groomed by a system, and telling, getting all their tickets punched, and telling the system what it wants to hear, and then they get to dress up and share the power like everybody else. So you're right. There's way too many doctors. There's way too many lawyers. There's way too many social service types. It's very top heavy, and that's exactly what you could expect to see in a like a system run by corporations using the various organs of state as their proxies.
Yeah, we've got past the point where, medicine, since we're talking about medicine, it's gone past the point, like there's a critical threshold where it can exist, sort of, it could, in theory, exist peacefully with humanity and natural healing and all that sort of stuff. But then it goes beyond that point, and it creates such a massive amount of demand for itself and such a massive amount of intervention that it creates a negative feedback loop. And then we have this social iatrogenesis and cultural iatrogenesis and obviously, like, the personal experience of iatrogenesis would basically just doctor caused harm. And but now, when it gets to that point with the ethos of, endless expansion and endless technological progress, and this idea that we can just keep doing the same thing, and if something goes wrong, if people are still sick, well, the problem is that we just don't have enough doctors or enough hospitals, and so we keep doing
Yes.
more and more of the same thing, and things get worse and worse because we've lost sight of the fact that that being healthy, for example, is an individual task. It's a full-time job. You're personally responsible for that, and if you outsource that and you abrogate, you then you're letting these professionals take over, and they can't make you be healthy. They can't prevent disease for you.
Yes.
All they can do is tinker with you like you're a like a mechanic would with a car, or give you a drug to try and rebalance some kind of supposed chemical imbalance or whatever. I mean, it's the whole ethos is completely insane, and it's become our adoption of that belief structure has, as a religion, and all these dogmas, it's become self-defeating now. So we have to just pull back and realize that, just because you can do something, just because the technology exists to do something, it doesn't mean that you should do it or that it's a good idea. We got by pretty well. We have gotten by pretty well, providing for ourselves and looking after ourselves, self-care and self-medication and all that sort of stuff. But again, we've got this industrial civilization that has disconnected us from our authentic roots, and we're wounded. We're the walking wounded. So it's like you said, just we're now conditioned so that we try to be nothing more than a functional, viable economic unit, and it applies to everyone's in this system virtually from birth now. That's how extensive and insidious and powerful it's become. And so whether they want to look at being a doctor, going into medicine, or being a lawyer, or wherever they're looking at going, the outcome's basically the same. They get put through the same conditioning, like you've been talking about, this operant conditioning, and the same brainwashing, and we've lost, we're not, we have no immune system against it because we've lost the authentic roots of what a human being actually is, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, how we're supposed to interact with each other, where our relationship is with planet Earth. Like, we're so synthetic now and so artificialized, it's like we forget that we actually need the water and the trees and all this stuff to
Yes.
exist. It's amazing, but we're so blinded now that you actually need to, like, almost point this out to people.
Well, We've had a fascinating first half, Brendan. Could you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you?
You can grab me at brendandmurphy.com, or you can find me through globalfreedommovement.org.
Well, in the second half, Brendan is going to talk a bit, hopefully a lot, about DNA activation and some of the key points of his book that I alluded to earlier. So, hang on, we got a lot more to share on the other side, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.